Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. All right, if it's Thursday, everybody knows that means something, all right? That means it's time for the Lynch and Kenny Hour. The Kenny Hour, not Kenny. And joining me from Texas is Tim Lynch. Tim, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, Max. How are you?
I'm all right. And from California, Southern California specifically, Jeff Kenny joins us. Jeff, what's up?
Good morning, Mac. How you doing? I'm good.
I'm all right. Hey, we have some stuff to talk about, but I want to. There's something that is like sticking in my gut, and I talked about it in the first hour this morning. But it makes me literally want to vomit when I see a picture of that man and that guy and that little girl. I don't know if you've seen the picture. It's everywhere. And then I see the bullshit that comes out of the Senate and the House of Representatives. I felt the same stuff relative to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, it's like, you know, you stand up there and you don't do your job, and then you stand up there and you're act all, you know, crushed. Your little heart is crushed because these horrible things happen. And it makes you want to puke. Right on whatever I'm watching, whether it's my phone or the TV or whatever. I'll give you guys a few seconds to comment before we move on.
Right. Yeah, I think it's hambone theatrics that you see on the TV and from Congress, particularly Congress. We were talking a little bit offline about the Constitution and how the government works and how that really isn't taught anymore in schools. Because if it was taught and people did know about it, the people in Congress would not have the brass, you know, gall to say the things they say, like in relation to that picture, because that could be fixed by Congress very quickly if they were so inclined. And, you know, and to pretend it's like the president's fault or, you know, it's the immigration and, you know, the border control people's fault, it's ICE's fault, it's just disingenuous and it's hopelessly see-throughable. I mean, anybody who has a little bit of education in this particular area knows it's just total baloney.
Yeah, it's disgusting, honestly. I don't know how they go to bed at night, honestly, and lay their heads on their pillow and know that they have, you know, they have the 80% solution sits in front of them and they control all the money. And again, we go back, 5 years, and the people that voted for, you know, whatever, $30 million for Southern Border Security, blah, 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 they won't go near it now. And I don't know. Timmy, you see it every day. Any thoughts?
Well, I do. Like I said, down here in the Hispanic portion of the country, they don't stay here, my friend. They are out of here so quickly, it'll make your head spin. And there's money being made in processing these people. I don't know where it is number one. Number two, I heard a story today on the news about a company, one of those companies that makes the industrial bets, you know, up there in Massachusetts, that the workers refused an order from the INS for beds that they could put into one of their facilities right down in Carrizo Springs, Texas, which is a super shitty place to be, by the way. I've been to Carrizo Springs many a time. Ugh. But they refused. The employees walked out rather than allow them to make the beds because they don't want the migrant children to have beds. They don't want to be helping President Trump. You know, orange man bad. That, to me, extends the lunacy so far beyond the pale that is why I watch the news. You cannot take these people seriously. You can't.
That's Wayfair. That's Wayfair. They got just what you need unless you're the president.
Yeah, Wayfair.
Right. All right.
That's exactly who it was. That's unbelievable.
The let's see. All right. Things I want to talk about. One, since the last time we talked, and I didn't realize the president listened to All Marine Radio, but He does. He said, you know what, those guys sound like they know what they're talking about. He did exactly what we said he should do. And then we've gone back and forth with name calling and other stuff, but no other incident, other than maybe some offensive cyber operations. But, Iran, other than its rhetoric, has not done anything, which I think follows the script that they want. But let me give each of you the floor. Jeff, thoughts on the last week since the last time we talked about Iran?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a good strategy that the president has. He ratcheted up the sanctions without really getting, you know, threatening in a military way, like a destructive way, other than to say if American blood is shed, then it'll be a catastrophe for Iran. So I think that's good. But I have to tell you, I tell you where we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable in Iraq, and for two reasons. There's Shia militia groups all over, like the Sunni areas, and some of them are openly Iranian-based, and some of them are like covertly Iranian-based, and some are anti-Iranian, Shia government from Iraq. So it's what I'm saying is if they do something in there, there's a couple of encyclopedias worth of plausible deniability, if you know what I mean.
Right.
They can do that. I get nervous about that because the Americans we have in there are not in a posture of defense as much as they are in a posture of support for the Iraqi units that are in there. So as long as we are aware of that and not just whistling past the graveyard. And I really don't know anything, you know, beyond that. Then, what I'm saying is open source stuff, you know, is that as long as we're somehow paying attention to that, you know, I feel good about the way things are going. You know, but I'm always thinking, you know, you always should think, when you're going to hit somebody, where am I vulnerable? And in today's world, anywhere you got an embassy or a consulate or, you know, anything like, even anything that Americans work for, Peace Corps, whatever, you're vulnerable, you know, to people who have no parameters.
No, and I those are the thoughts that I have in my head. You know, they've been so good over the last 40 years at continuing to find, you know, asymmetric ways to get to us. You know, it's like, what aren't we paying attention to? What aren't we paying attention to? What aren't we paying attention to? And something we might be paying attention to, we might not be paying attention to it in the right way.
Right, exactly.
Right. Timmy, thoughts on the last week?
I'm going to try to make to ease Jeff's mind a bit. As I went into the deep dive on last Friday about the type of drone that we sent over there, the thing I failed to emphasize was if there was one Global Hawk drone in our inventory that we had that we could afford to get shot down because it no longer had any purpose, it was that drone.
Wow.
Now, maybe this was coincidence. Maybe it was coincidence, maybe it's not. That drone does not fly like a regular Global Hawk. It comes about half the distance to the deck to use its sideband radar and whatnot.
Right.
What are the chances that we flew that drone into Iranian airspace? Because if I was planning the op, that'd be 100%. I absolutely would send that drone, which has to have a signature that looks like a jet aircraft. It's a big damn bird. I absolutely would have sent it at their most vulnerable target to see how long it took them to shoot me down. And by the time I would say, hey, I was in international airspace. Who the hell is going to tell you different? The Iranians are going to claim you were there whether you were or not. So you've got some information from that. Then you send a strike where you mobilize everybody. You tell the Brits, you tell everybody, stand by. We're going to unleash the can of whoop ass, but you turn it around at the last minute. How much intelligence did you gather as every emitter they had in Pakistan and Turkey had lit up? You got their entire order of battle down to a gnat's ass over two incidents that involved, one, a drone that we were going to throw away anyway, so who the hell cared, and two, an attack that was absolutely brilliant, because if he had launched one missile, we would have had collateral damage. You know this, because they would have caused it themselves. It doesn't matter that we didn't hit an apartment. They'd hit their own apartment, and they'd film it, and they'd be saying, because this is what they do. We know that's what they were going to do. We're in
We're
going to
end up like
that
white version of Diamond and Silk here, man. I'd be much
happier if Mattis and Dunford were running the show. Then I would be impressed. Because this may not be intentional, but this is where we are.
I hope
it is. And guess what?
Because it is, it makes me feel better.
And don't, yeah, and don't underestimate the damage a cyber attack does. All that mainline equipment is shot. You've got to reprogram everything. You've got to shoot the bugs to make sure we didn't leave malware behind. That shit costs billions, so don't underestimate the cyber attack.
Right.
We not only knocked out the radar, we've got the whole order of battle and Pakistan's too. Now tell me who's in the driver's seat now.
Right. And General Keane said, President Trump's the first one has ever got the Iranians dancing to his strategy instead of the other way around like we've been since 1979, basically. And maybe that's what he's talking about. I mean, I don't know.
I'll make a deal. I want to make a deal. Oh, I fucking love the guy. I love the guy. I'm sorry. I just do. Whether it's luck or not.
All right. What would be the indications that what you're saying is true? Give me things that I will see.
Wait a second. You've got to look at this. First off, what I read to you about that drone that got shot down is open source information. I didn't make that shit up. I sent you the article.
And I know that your clearance has long since been revoked, just so everybody knows.
That's all open source. Number two, I'm not saying that we intentionally did that with that raid, but let me ask you something, Matt, because you've been at the Big Blue Arrow level. If you were thinking up courses of action, how long would it take you to think up, hey, I got a drone I don't use. Let's go send it straight at him, see what they do. Fuck them. What do I care if he shoots to death? That's a great course of action, is it not?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so because I have sat in the corner and watched those kind of things, the question then becomes unintended consequences.
Right.
Can we make sure that this thing gets contained, right? Or what happens if it gets bigger than what you're talking about? What happens if this precipitates that or something that we don't anticipate?
Well, Mac, are you saying that because there's no real counter to this? I mean, because there's no bloodshed and there's no
right,
nothing except some posturing and then us pulling back.
You're saying that in hindsight, though. Okay, none of that's happened yet. Okay, so we're going to send it. We're not exactly sure of the response. Is it simply going to be shoot it down? Is it going to be ignored? Might it be shoot it down and shoot it at a ship? Might it be shoot it down and execute an operation in Iraq? What is this going to precipitate, and how do we know that we're going to keep it contained?
Hey, look, I'm not saying this was the strategy.
You're asking me about the blue, my experience at OPTN, and sitting around with smart guys talking about stuff, can we contain it? Do we know we can contain it? And again, the thing that I go back to during the week and have since Jeff said it is, the asymmetrical thing. That worries me.
Yeah, that's what happens now. We got to pay attention. We totally, and Israel did it with the Arabs from 1948 all the way on, and we've been doing it every time we come to blows with these guys, and we're talking mainly Iraq.
Right.
They're so utterly defeated, in a stand-up fight that the humiliation factor is it's like the mother's milk of the of the ambition to hit us back. So that's a good one. That's why I worry about the guys in Iraq, about our posture there, because we're integrating.
Let me make a point about that, the posture. So let's just say, we have units and American personnel scattered around, and we've gone and we've reinforced that. What happens if they decide to ball up and say, we're going to go capture all 30 of them?
Yeah,
right. We've got a battalion, and we're going to overrun them.
Yeah.
And so again, how many times did we see in more than Iraq than Afghanistan, for me anyway, that if you don't have your security 360 degrees, and if your antennas aren't emitting, and you don't have your head in the game, and you're not collecting and putting it all together, if somebody's not looking in their sector, right, they lay the wood to you, right? And they're good at it, because what they do is they give you the feint or the deception. They get you to focus on it, and they try to cave your head in from a different direction. And
well,
I have
tremendous 11 attack.
Right. I mean, how many times did we see it? And again, in Iraq, IED, RPGs, medium machine guns from this direction. Everybody slews that way. You're in a gunfight, and all of a sudden, here comes a water truck right behind a white opal. Ba-boom. Breaches the exterior, and the water truck's inside, you know, and hopefully somebody smokes a dude through the windshield, and his dead man switch goes, because if he gets inside, there's going to be a lot of dead Marines and dead Iraqi soldiers.
You're exactly right. The whole point of, like, you do something that makes the QRF come out so you can plan on whacking the QRF.
And they did.
So we put the QRF out there constantly. I mean, you know, there's tit for tat.
Right.
That's how that shit goes. The thing with this though is what we've basically done here is it's like sound and fury signifying nothing, because we postured big and we pulled back and we made it look like we did it because we were concerned about Iranian lives, you know.
But let me ask you this. I mean, the guys in Iraq are in Iraq. They were always in play. There was nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
If they make a move like that, is there any doubt in your mind that President Trump will respond?
Yeah, but do we respond in Iraq, or do we respond somewhere else where they're vulnerable?
To Iran. They'll go right back to Iran. I believe there's no question. Yeah. There's no question in my mind that he wouldn't let them play the, hey, it was Shia guys out of control game, that he'd go right at them. And now, when we go at them, how much intelligence do we have? We are we're going to be so capable of hammering their asses so thoroughly that it's going to be breathtaking because of what, and I'm not saying we did this intentionally, that they sent that drone to be shot down.
But you're talking about a shooting war with Iraq, though.
With Iran.
That everybody says we want to avoid that. So just again, in this Big Blue Arrow OPT, when we talk about it, we deliberately send in a drone to, because we're, Big Timmy, I don't like, we have means of locating all that shit short of using a drone to send it in there.
Yeah, but I understand that. I'm not.
So I don't know. Again, that sets into motion
because of what happened. This is where we're sitting, intelligence wise, preparation of the battlefield wise. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I would question though. My own opinion is this. I mean, we're really good at crawling up everybody's ass. And knowing their systems, and I mean, we have the things that our intel guys do and girls do. I mean, it's amazing when they paint you a picture of something, you know, especially this kind of stuff. We're really good at it. And you know, here's the effectiveness of their radar. I mean, think about even back when we did the Desert One operation, right? That was all based on a gap in Iranian radar coverage on the southern coast.
Right. That's right. Absolutely right.
And so, I mean, we're good. In my opinion, we're good at that. And so I question the validity of what you say, but you say that really doesn't even matter because now we got this additional intel. Right. And I say, I think we already had it anyway.
Right. Let me ask you this, Matt. And let me ask you this. Okay. So let's just say there was a plan that was similar to this, you know, where we deliberately send a drone over there that's not, you know, really that valuable to us, and it gets shot down, and then we do, okay, that's the hypothesis, that that's what we did.
Okay.
So that plan is put out there and is deemed to be too risky for all the reasons you said.
Okay.
However, then this drone's flying around, because we always have drones up, you know, and they shoot down a drone anyway. Maybe it isn't even over in Iranian airspace.
Right.
I bet you it really wasn't.
Right.
They shoot it down anyway, and so somebody goes, hey, let's put plan, you know, Xerox into effect, you know, that idea.
Right.
Because even though we didn't plan it that way, we can take advantage of this the whole spinning up and everything and then not pulling the trigger on it,
right.
You know, and we can get the same benefit of the original hypothesis, but it's not really that it's an opportunistic thing to where it looks like we're responding when we're really not. But at the same time, we are because we're fucking ratcheting up those sanctions. I mean, now what is it? The Khamenei can't buy underwear in Paris or something like that. Who knows what it is?
He can't use his debit card in Karachi.
Yeah,
he's got to use his wife.
Fourth wife. Yeah.
All right, Timmy. Any other thoughts about your own hypothesis?
Just I hope he's right.
No, not really. Other than to add, you know, you throw in the advocating for a Pashtun and different homelands for the tribes there, the Baluch and the Kurds, and now you're talking about everybody reacting to us. Oh my God, I would just love to see it happen someday because it's going to be how it ends up. Mark my words.
You know, I was I played a couple segments of a segment from Al Jazeera to get, you know, I just said, let's turn the kaleidoscope. So I played a couple segments from the BBC and them kind of roundtabling the president's actions, implications, blah, blah, blah. And I did the same thing with Al Jazeera, although it was only one segment, about 25 minutes. And one of the things I thought one of the people said was, I think it was on the Al Jazeera thing, well, look, relative to the JPOA, right, the agreement that the P5 plus one, which is a permanent five members plus Germany, signed with Iran, the guy says this. Well, first of all, you have to understand, right, Russia and China don't live up to any agreement, okay? So what they did, they like them. And then the United States backed out of it. And Europe hasn't lived up to it either. So really, and this is the funny part, the only person living up to this unilaterally are the Iranians. Right? I'm like, the only thing missing is the rim shot. So so then I'm thinking, okay, anybody who watched Bibi Netanyahu's one he did at the UN, the other one he did in front of like a wall of DVDs of data, right? And started showing Iranian shit that the Mossad had yoked up. And I think if you put those pieces together, you realize that the Iranians aren't going to live by it either. And so this is like agreement like of smuck city. Right, and the Americans are the ones that are shitty because we backed out. When the Russians and the Chinese will never, you know, live up to their parts of it, right? Europe's not living up to their part of it. But it's on the United States because President Trump said, hey, I think this is bullshit. They're still going to get a weapon, and we can't have that. And none of the JPOA is tied to their regional behavior. And so we're enabling them, right, to a path to a nuclear weapon. And then everybody says, no, we're not. We're monitoring, you know, uranium being mined. We're monitoring their throughput in their subterfuges. We're monitoring all, we got it all. Like, look, if you believe that, I got some coastland in Iowa that I want to sell you. Okay.
So you don't think the sanctions are hurting them?
Oh, no. I do. That's the part I do think that. And really what this whole thing is a fight for, it's a fight for the European leadership. Okay, because if Europe decides, we got to provide some relief to Iran and we really don't want to see our lines of business go up in smoke because it's billions of dollars, and we talked about that last week, right? So this fight and what the president did was, you know, he behaved like Europe would want him to behave, with restraint. And so in this courtship of what Europe will do, because if Europe stands with the United States, Iran is screwed.
Right.
They have no place to go economically, and that will cause destabilization inside Iran, and that has its own implications. So I thought it was really interesting to listen to somebody dissect it, talk about how other nations are treating the treaty, and then that, you know, the charcoal always dumped in the lap of the United States, except maybe it ain't that way. So I thought that was interesting.
I got a question for you, Matt. What are the chances that the Iranian regime is operating with perfect or even decent intelligence concerning Trump's popularity in America, how things are going with the American electorate, how much Trump represents the will of the American people, et cetera, et cetera? What do you think the chances are they have an accurate read on our political situation here?
Well, I mean, I don't think you need to. I think that it's really good. I think they've honed that for a lot of years. They have John Kerry working for them. You know? So, yeah, I mean, I would think that.
I think about what they're. You know, they're getting CNN, and they're getting a lot of that.
Underestimate your opponent. Let me tell you, for 40 years, they've had their way with us.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
And I don't like them, right? The leadership of that country and the Quds and all that, I'll speak for all of us. We collectively hate them.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But I will tell you this, just like I had tremendous respect for the guys we fought in Al Anbar, because let me tell you, they could think it, right? They could think it. If they could have learned sight, picture, sight alignment, that would have turned out different. No doubt in my mind, because they initiated 99% of the contact, and 99% of the time they missed. If they could have hit 50% of the time, our casualties would have been threefold what they were, or higher.
They were smart, and they had small numbers of technically proficient people with certain weapon systems. But you're right, because you see guys stand up all of a sudden. In Haditha or in Barwana, and here's the guy with a fucking video camera. He stands up, and that tells everybody that something's going to happen. We just started shooting at that guy, and sure as shit, every time, the roof caved in. And you're right, direct fire, which should have been, there's always, you know, an IED, command detonate IED associated with a complex attack, and then there's direct fire, and thank God, I don't think they ever understood the idea of the clear front sight and the fuzzy target. You know what I mean?
No.
Because they're always chasing the bull.
Thank God.
Not all. I mean, they did have some snipers there for sure. But you're right, man.
Well, you know what? And that's how you knew there was somebody. There was somebody new in town, right? Yeah. First round hits. Like, are these Chechens that are here? And first round hits with cruiser weapons. That means somebody else just rolled into town that we don't know about.
It's like 2009, Tim. You remember, all of a sudden we started with that road that I think was Tampa, that went from basically Torquem Gate up there through to Bargham Atoll all the way up there. You started getting those EFPs, you know, those fucking penetrator IEDs, and you knew they were from Iran. Right. You know, they put them in the corn. And, you know, the Army didn't want to burn the corn. U.S. Army didn't want to burn. Are you shitting me? The corn grows right up to the edge of the fucking road, man. Remember?
That was a bad day. I would go back there with Ralph Ward when he'd go police some of those explosives up. That was a bad day.
No, but my point is that, you know, I as much as I despise Iran, I respect them because they have been able to keep the United States at arm's length. And look what they've done. I mean, look how they've expanded their sphere of influence in the Middle East. I mean, it's astounding. I mean, they have the Arab nations on the run.
Yeah, they've made good use of their Shia minorities in certain areas.
Right. They have mastered keeping the United States at bay, and then developing all their proxy partners, right? And that's what that's what now the threat is, right? They are going to light off proxy war, you know, from Hezbollah. They're going to light off proxy war in Iraq. They're going to light it off all over the place if the United States goes down that road with them.
Yeah, I mean, in 2007 to 2009, they pretty much had their way with the Israelis there in southern Lebanon. You know?
Right.
So it's like, I mean, they're flying guys in, they're flying fighters in, Shia guys from, I can't believe this, from Somalia. Joe Mattis laid it out for us,
right.
You know, when he was the, you know, the one left CG. And, yeah, there's definitely, that's definitely a, uber competent group.
Right. So you have to respect them. And the thing they don't want to do is they don't want to lay down, they don't want to line up in against us any way, shape, or form conventionally.
Right.
You know?
But you know, Mac, as good as they are, and I know because I live with them for over a year, you know, they're not monolithic like the Germans. You know what I mean? They're not like all,
right.
They're all not all behind, you know, the Ayatollah.
Right.
There's a lot of, they like that. They like the old freedom of movement and stuff. They love to do business. They, you know, they love to make money and shit, you know. They're not as, you know, that's why it's very delicate how you deal with them. I think that's why the president's idea about doing the show, the sanctions, is better than if we were just whacking them places, because the whacking thing draws people together. But this thing is a little different, because there's strong minorities within Iran that don't really like the whole fucking religious crazy shit, you know?
You know, the other... Go ahead, Timmy.
I just wanted to pile on that, because one of the... I mean, they've got right now, I think, 3 brigades worth of Hazaras from Afghanistan fighting ISIS in Syria. But I don't think they could take those brigades and turn them against Afghanistan. I don't think the guys fighting there feel that kind of allegiance. I think they're there for money, quite frankly, and a chance to fight ISIS, right?
Is that open source? Because that's amazing to me. Man, I never heard that. So you're talking like 6,000 Hazaras in Syria.
Oh, no, there's thousands of them over there. That is absolutely open source. I wouldn't know. Hell, they've got, there's damn MRAPs in that place that they drove over there from Afghanistan. But that's not my point. My thing was is that Jeff is absolutely right. As good as those Quad Force guys are, I don't think that every stinking organization that they get themselves involved with, they can control outside of what that organization is sort of aiming itself at. The Hazara guys fighting for them need money, and they don't mind going after ISIS. But you couldn't turn them and throw them at the government of Afghanistan. I don't think they'd fight.
Yeah, those fucking Shia, man, they're like the mix of Islam. Like the Irish, they're like, they don't like being fucking walked over, you know what I mean? And they've shown it. The Shia in Iraq don't really like the Shia in Iran in a lot of cases. And the Shia Hazaras, you know, they get fucked big time by the other minority groups in Afghanistan through the ages. And they're a wild card. They're a wild card. But we have to, but you know, the prudent thing is to treat Iran, you know, ostensibly as a monolithic capable enemy, because they are, but the monolithic part is not, that's their weakness.
Here's another thing that kept coming up over and over again during the week, and that is the whole how the IRGC exists inside of Iran, and the president kind of, now I'll say this about Donald Trump, right? He says shit that people go, oh, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out to be right. So somebody whispers in his ear, and then he comes out and he plays like the dumb guy and throws it out. I'm not exactly sure, but I'm pretty sure that my campaign might have got spied on.
Yeah, I remember that.
What? What? How crazy is that? Now, you know, so again, I don't know what our secret people, right, that are spooky people, that are even our spooky people can't talk to. But when the president says, I'm not sure that this was all wired together, and this goes to the part of separate rice bowls and not monolithic, I'm not sure this is all wired together. Because in the discussion about nuclear weapons, right, the reason that there can be no agreement relative to their external behavior in the region is because the federal government and the president doesn't control that. The IRGC controls it along with the people that control the IRGC, which is not the federal government. So they prosecute this thing, and it's like, yeah, we'd have to ask those guys and say, please, if that's what we wanted. And so... So to me, the more I kind of read and listened, you heard that from a number of different sources about the relationship the IRGC has, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, for those of you who don't know, right, with the federal government, and how the federal government controls the development of nuclear weapons, the IRGC does not. And so they could enter into a treaty, blah, 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 blah. But they could not include these other things in it because they don't control those things. And so it was just kind of interesting what the president said when he was acting like a dumb guy, because normally that's how he leaks really high-level intel that gets slipped to him.
Yeah.
So interesting. Yeah.
The other thing about the guy is he tells us shit that nobody else, I've heard people criticize him for not keeping his cards closer to his vest. That's his strength, though. You know, he's not going to leak, real classified material, but he's going to leak some things, and just like you said, Mac. He's talking to more than just us when he's talking.
Let me ask you a question. Does not the Revolutionary Guard hold a lot of their power because they get themselves involved in businesses and ventures like that and get money that way?
Well, that has been evidently a relatively recent phenomenon. They are the Gestapo, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just saying the economic sanctions are hurting them too. Every bit as much as it's hurting everybody else because they've got a big stake in that game.
Right.
Personally, the leadership.
Right. All right. Let's transition to topic number two. I'm curious. The three of us met when there was this incredible renaissance occurring in the Marine Corps that General Gray started in the late 80s and into the early 90s when we were all together. And, I mean, we read, and we were part of that. At IOC, we were the jihadists, right? Thoughts on the Marine Corps reading less. And it's kind of interesting. I interviewed, Chris Woodbridge, who you guys know, on the, yesterday. And I was asking him about, his thoughts on it, because the Gazette becomes a lightning rod for that. And he said, it's been amazing. It's been amazing how animated the discussion has been, and that people are learning now about discipline, and all this discourse has been most healthy. I'm curious about your thoughts about the Marine Corps reading less, about this whole discipline and this whole debate about discipline, reintroducing people into reading about it, listening to it, right, and discussing it. You know, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm like, every day I'm involved with, mostly E5s, E6s, and then O3, captains and a couple lieutenants and majors and stuff. I have to say, the education level is, they're interested if you present it to them. And I'm doing a PME tomorrow, believe it or not, where the OAC of ATB wants me to show the movie The Man Who Would Be King and then talk about it. So I'm going to do that tomorrow at 1400, and I don't know if there's anybody who's getting royalties for Rudyard Kipling. I'm going to push the idea of reading his books and stuff, and I'm going to talk about that. Of course, it's related to the guy who's in charge now. Just got back from being the task force commander in Takata, that was his first time ever being an advisor, Artie Bubba. He really is into it now, and he wants to, which is a good thing. So I'm doing that for him tomorrow, and I'm tying it into, the whole nine yards of it. And I have to tell you, if you talk to these youngsters about how this relates to them, how it relates to what they're doing, when I say youngsters, I mean, that could be everybody now,
right.
from the CG right now. But I'm talking about the guys at the E5 to E7 level and the guys from the O1 to the O3 level. You guys are important, and it's important that you be educated about this stuff. So, you know, the reading list thing that I've been giving out is mostly related to security force assistance shit, whether you're talking about Presley O'Banion or you're talking all the way up about John Paul Vann, you know, in Vietnam. You know, it's that type of stuff. But I have to tell you, you know, when you engender fascination, that's the best way to educate somebody. If you can engender fascination in them, you know, you teach a class that's, you know, 45, 50 minutes long. But in, but what you've done, you let a fire in a guy that he's going
to
go off on his own
solve,
and look and find out more about it and know more than you about that particular thing. That's the idea. Now, are you asking, is that common? Because it's not common right now. If that's what you're asking, Matt.
Yeah, I'm just, I was asking just your thoughts on it because, I mean, I think it just reading in our own education was so important to, I think, our successes as leaders, the way we train, the way we push envelopes when we train.
Right.
And, I mean, most of it was ideas. I mean, the ideas that I got for, the instructor education program, I got that out of a book called The Enlightened Soldier. And I walked into John Allen's office and I said, hey, sir, I think we should do an instructor education program here and we should go pitch it to the basic school. I'll write up the POI if you'll go across the street and pitch it with me. Matt, I'd be happy to. And so we did, but I copied that, right, from the crowd. And my son ran the instructor education program at the basic school while he was there. I'm like, yo, bitch, I invented that thing. Yeah. I copied it out of a book. I told Woody the criteria that I use for evaluation of tactical events and things is four things that I got out of the book. I think is called Wiedemeyer Reports.
Right, Wiedemeyer.
Right, yeah.
Smart guy.
Right, but he went to the Kriegs Academy.
Yep, the Kriegs Academy. I never would have thought of you as a fucking penis envy Wehrmacht guy, Mac. But.
I wasn't, and I can't. I saw a footnote though, because I started reading footnotes. And
that's where the good shit is.
You don't know that though. I spent most of my life not reading footnotes, right? And then I find out that it's all in the footnotes. So I'm reading footnotes and I see, you know, he's quoting the German troop leading manual of 1934. Yeah. And I read the footnote and it quotes it. And then there's a little number. So I'm like, oh, that's a footnote. Let me read that. And it says, Wiedemeyer's paper, translation of the troop leading manual, Library of Congress, bin, you know, 57. And I'm like, all I got to do is go up and get a Library of Congress card, and I can go look at that shit.
Yeah.
That's what I did. And so,
hey, let me just throw a cliche. You want to get a new idea, you read an old book.
There you go. And so I go up there, and the way I would evaluate things is the same as the German Kriegs Academy did, right? One, logical combat thinking, okay? It doesn't have to be the way that you would do it. But if you could see the premises lead to the execution, right, lead to the tasks, that's what you're looking for, okay? Yeah. Next, good tactical judgment, right? You can't do stupid shit out here, okay? Three, timely and aggressive application of the principles that we've taught you. Four, seizure and maintenance of the initiative. Those four things. And people would say, hey, where did you get those? And I would say, I thought them up.
Chesty Puller.
No, I'd say, I thought them up. Those are mine. And they'd say, wow, those are really good. I'd say, no, man. I got them from Wiedemeyer Reports. They're out of the Kriegs Academy. That's how they did it. And so, I mean, so much of the shit that we did, you know, came to us in different, you know, whether it be, hey, why don't we do this problem out of Hackworth's Vietnam Primer thing?
Yes, yeah. Let me tell you, a little footnote about Wiedemeyer. He's the guy who said, you're going to need 101 infantry divisions to do this thing. And when it was all said and done in World War II, General Marshall ended up with 101
right.
divisions.
He was a major.
He said that in 1939.
He was a major when he wrote that shit.
Yep, Yeah.
That's hilarious. But that's what I mean, the significance of reading, right? And again, that all changed with General Kelly when he got to IOC. IOC, a lot of it was, you know, can you tie this knot with one hand? Now, I'm not saying that not tying with one hand isn't important, because it is, okay? The reading part of it, imbuing the young lieutenants that came through with this sense of, you know, you're involved in a big intellectual endeavor here. And I remember, you know, it seems like once a year we'd get a class that would have a shit ton of Ivy League guys in it. Brown.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember those guys showed up.
Right, Brown, Cornell, Harvard, Yale, right? And like half the class. And it would be such a cool experience when they would walk up and say, I never thought that this job would challenge me intellectually like I was challenged, you know, in college. And honestly, it's beyond the challenge that I got in college, because the consequences are so much higher and the knowledge is so much greater. This is incredible. This is what I didn't expect. And I mean, you would go home that night going, that's awesome that you've infected this kid with this seriousness, that you approach this craft of leading in combat from the front as an infantryman, and what a huge moral obligation he has to educate himself. And it was just cool. It was cool.
Yeah, and I mean, not having General Kelly and then General Allen backing you up was good, because they could talk to themselves. You know what I mean? So it was like,
oh my God, are you kidding me? The first day I walked into IOC, right, Lieutenant General Craparata is a captain. Lieutenant General Osterman is a captain. Lieutenant General Clarity is a captain. General Kelly is a major. And so I show up the first day, I shit you not, I walk in there and they're like, okay, you're going to share a desk with Jody Osterman. So, Mac, put your shit over there. All right. They're arguing about the Algerian insurrection.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't even think I really knew where Algeria was, and I sure as fuck didn't know that they had that they had an insurrection. And I thought, holy shit, man! I don't know that.
Algerians, man.
So,
and what's worse, for those that don't know, to understand what the French were doing there, you need to understand what happened to them in Vietnam, because that was what influenced everything in Algeria.
Hence me saying the Centurions, that book. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great book. Hey, I got something to illustrate this point that I wanted to bring up, and that is, I'm reading an old book right now, and I'm going to tell you what it's about, and I'm going to tell you who wrote it, and I know what you're going to react, how your reaction is going to be. It's about Texas and Texans, and it was written by T.R. Fehrenbach.
Ooh. Oh,
right.
Who's a local? I read that book. He's kind of racist, but he's got a lot of good shit, man.
No, my point being that if I say T.R. Fehrenbach, which this kind of war, shoot, you were quoting out of that, or somebody mentioned that yesterday on your show, Matt, that book is so well written and it was so profound that I know if you guys were just like, shit, I'd like to sit that read that book, that way you would find it relaxing, how much you would enjoy reading that. I know you would. You would just enjoy
it. I would read it. I would simply read it because Fehrenbach wrote it, and you know, This Kind of War is, you know, probably one of the best books I've ever read. And his insight, you know, when he writes it, is incredible. So
General Allen, huge T.R. Fehrenbach fan. He recommended that book to me remember how we used to do the murder boards? It was the guy who taught the class before you and the IOC director. Right. At IOC. So it was Ray Grado, remember Grado? Right. And General Allen for me for Mech Ops. And I had all these big ideas about Mech Ops. And General Allen, he expanded them. You know what I mean? And one of the things that he talked about later was he's a big Fehrenbach fan, right. You know, General Allen was. And about the whole thing, you know, about Texas. And you got to understand Fehrenbach when you read that book. You know, understand his background and so forth. But you're right, Timmy, because there's another book. And I can't remember the guy's name now, but he wrote a book called The Blood Meridian and some other things about Texas. Do you know what I'm talking about? He might have been the guy who wrote
I do.
Pro Men.
I do. But I read it too.
Not McCarthy, maybe it's Cormac McCarthy.
You know, the point I'm making isn't so much about Texas, it's about how much we enjoy reading, and I can't imagine how anybody who's been in our profession would be at our age and wouldn't find himself reading constantly. You know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that you're always curious, like, do I got what it takes?
Yeah.
And then, if that's the case, what does it take? And how do I find out what it takes? And no one's talking about, you know, not that much, but when the more you read, the better armed you are when you run into those guys who know about it to prompt them to actually talk to you. Because if you go to a Vietnam vet and say, what was I like in Nam? He ain't going to tell you shit. But he said, oh, who are you with in Vietnam? And he says, well, you know, I was with 226 and, you know, and you can tell him what year are you there? And you can say, oh, so you went from Con Tien to, you know, Khe Sanh. What was that like? When he hears that, when he hears a little bit of knowledge, in other words, you've had the, you've taken the time to read a little bit about, you know, what actually happened there, and you can talk to a guy about, you know, about operations he was on, even if it's just in a peripheral way, that's a trigger for him, and you can get more information, so you get better at this job. That's the whole idea, right?
Yeah, but
I told Woody yesterday, I blame the Vietnam guys for not talking more about their shit. And you're right, Jeff. I mean, you have, there's a certain way that they will give you their information. And what I told Woody was, I'm embarrassed, and Tim said the same thing. I'm embarrassed. I didn't get what General Van Riper was saying. And I defended myself though by blaming Vietnam guys, which the whole country does, so I just piled on that shit. So I said, but it wasn't all my fault because they didn't talk about their shit.
Yeah.
We ran from the lessons of Vietnam. I mean, look, we all worked in Quantico. We couldn't wear jungle boots. Right?
Yeah.
We had to wear black Cadillacs, man. We had to wear leather boots soaked and wet for fucking days. We had to wear woodland utilities, right? We couldn't wear a bush cover. All the stuff that we have now, we were not allowed to wear because we were running from Vietnam. And we ran from it intellectually too because, I mean, Van Riper talks for maybe 90 seconds before the clouds part. Yeah. And you're like, oh shit.
Right.
Oh, but, you shit. Know, some right. guys would just tell you. You know, I had this guy when I was, remember it, when you went to Oki on UDP? I was a sergeant. I went there, and I had this warrant officer who had been in 3-4 in 67. And they had this horrific thing where they had to carry their dead guys, like we were talking about before, for like a day and a half, up and down those fucking superheated hills in the rain. He told him the company gun he was like shot so bad, he just said, just go, man. He just give me a cigarette and go. And they left him there up against a tree smoking.
Wow.
I mean, so... You know, but you're right. You know, you get a guy here and there. My NCIC in Iran, who later became my company gunny in 3-5, he was like that. I triggered him by asking questions. I read this book, Small Unit Action in Vietnam, by our friend, Bing West. And the first thing he said was, that Bing West guy is kind of full of shit. Here's what really happened on Howard's Hill in regards to the relief of Howard's Hill. And here's what really happened on the big gunfight, Lieutenant Colonel Kaufman, 1-5. They ran in the pouring rain, they ran into an NVA regiment that was walking perpendicular to them, and they didn't recognize each other until they were intermixed, if you know what I mean. And it was an old trench system they all fell into. But it's a great story in that book. And in pointing out what really happened, what a huge education it was. You know, what a huge... And this guy was a 60 mortarman. He said, nobody, we were too close for that shit. You know, and I thought to myself, you know, the only way to get Gunny to talk is you got to pay a ticket. You got to give him a ticket of some kind of, you know, initial knowledge, and then he'll spit it out. I mean, for those guys, that's how it was. And then later on when I became an officer, I'll tell you a guy who was very forthcoming and wanting to do PMEs, Ray Smith.
Right.
And he would fucking force... You know, and John Ripley was another one. John Ripley, he would fucking tell you.
Well, let me just interject this. In Zinni's PME that I have memorized, right?
Yeah.
Zinni says, you know, I got to tell you, they're always hitting me up for my combat experiences. And I got to tell you, I'm reluctant to share them. Because sometimes I might see things that appeared to have happened in a logical manner, right? Because that's what I saw. But then he says something like, but I've learned that, you know what? Maybe that wasn't logical. Maybe that was just happenstance. Now, I would admonish Zinni that talk about it and say those things.
Say
like,
that.
It happened like this, but you know what? The more I think about it, I don't think that guy was there because I tricked him to being there. I think he was just there.
Yeah.
And I don't really know the truth. I don't really know the fucking truth.
That's how General Smith was.
Yeah.
If you listen to him talk, it was like one disaster after another. Starting with when Sergeant Gonzalez got killed away by the RPG.
Right.
And all the way through when he finally left Vietnam after the Battle of Quang Tri in the fall of 1972. You know, I mean, he had a couple tours there. And, you know, he was utterly and totally truthful. And you never heard about any personal heroism on his part. And the same thing with General Zinni when he talked about his experiences at 1-5 in Vietnam in 1970 were significantly different than 1-5 in Hue City in 1968, and even different than 1-5 in the Anwar River Basin in 1969 when James Webb was in that same company that Zinni ended up being in command of a few months later, you know?
Right.
So that's fascinating to me, the truth of it. You know, the putting back, whether we're talking about, and Timmy will recognize this, when we did that HRP course, the whole thing was about Platt and Maddox, these two psychos in Florida who shot up these FBI guys.
Wait, tell everybody, explain what HRP is.
HRP is High Risk Personnel Pistol Course. And it was Timmy went through first, and then I went through after him with Herr Schwerd, believe it or not, Major Schwerd. And it was a great course, but the whole thing was based on these two fucking aggressive former Army dudes who whacked out, like they killed two FBI agents and shot five more, I think it was, Timmy. And Mike, my buddy, who is a former cop and a former DA, just sent me the book by Fred Morales. Remember Morales? Finally killed the two guys?
The one who survived and fought, the guy with the shotgun.
Survived and fought. He was a law enforcement professional we sent to Iraq. When I was running this training thing here in 2008, he shows up. I go, "Are you the Ed Morales?" "Yes, I am." "If you mean the guy who shot those two assholes in Florida?" "Yes."
"Cool."
And I go, "Can you do a PMA?" And he did. And General Mattis came to that PME. And it was in that fucking tetanus shot need in place we were training these guys up down by the AAV place. But my point is this: you know, to get these guys to talk, you got to show them you know a little bit about it other than, "Hey, you know, what was it like having a gunfight?" You know, or, "Hey, what was it like in the NOM, man?" You got to show that you had enough respect for what they did to get some as much background as you could.
Yeah, to learn about it. I agree.
Right.
You know what? And do you guys remember going to Antietam with Jay Lubos, the guy that wrote the Army War College?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah.
With Alan.
He knew everything about
Lubos. Remember that, Mac? I think you were still there.
No, I wasn't. I went probably 2 years before that with General Kelly.
Okay. Okay, so we're with Jay Lubos, and he starts talking about the battle.
Hold on.
Oh, you guys already know this.
Tell everybody. Wait. Tell everybody who Jay Lubos is.
Oh, Jay Lubos wrote a series of articles, of books, for the Army War College on various Civil War battlefields. He's a very, very famous Civil War historian. And, I mean, he is like the dean of Civil War historians. And he came from Carlisle to meet with the IOC instructors and walk them through the Battle of Antietam. And as he got started, he realized that we already knew the battle. We'd already been there a day and a half, right?
Right.
And he goes, "You guys really want to see what was behind the scenes?" And we're like, "Yes." And Billy goes, "All right, come on, let's go." And what a hell of a day that was. Remember that shit, Jeff?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's talking about all kinds of stuff, to include ghosts. I mean, when the hell are you going to hear about ghosts from a historian?
Frederick the Great. The other thing, this guy wrote like three or four books about Frederick the Great. And I'm like, who the fuck is that? I kind of knew who it was, but then he like, you know, you get interested because Frederick the Great leads right into Napoleon, which, you know, leads right into a lot of stuff, you know, so it's like, yeah, Luvas, Jay Luvas. We had him as, when we were captains, Tim, I think the class that graduated before the one where we had Hackworth come talk to lieutenants, Jay Luvas talked to lieutenants at their graduation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. No, that's right. I remember the Hackworth thing. I went to the airport to pick him up. That was cool.
Yeah, we both did, remember? And he said, I got to go. We said, hey, you want to drink?
Yeah, I did.
And he said,
it's one of the few times he went up to D.C. and didn't drink beer, as I recall.
What?
Yeah. I said, it might have been the only time we didn't drink beer when we went up to D.C.
Yeah.
The,
Timmy, we're in Charlie's. I remember because we had to be in Charlie's that day, remember?
When we went with Jay Luvas, we get out there and, you know, we have maps on the ground and Luvas comes up and he's going to give the nickel tour, right? Yeah. All right. Now, the way the two armies arrive here. And so I remember standing there listening, going, we're not going to do the nickel tour, man. And so he's talking and he paused and I said, hey, sir, before you go any further, can I ask you a question about General Lee? And he said, sure. I said, why does Lee fight here, right, with one ford to his rear and both flanks pinned against the river? And he looks around, he says, does everybody understand that question? Right? And everybody,
no, that was the one I was on. I was with you that
okay,
day.
Then you
My
were...
memory wasn't so acute as to how that it got turned around, but
right.
I remember that.
Right, and he said, yeah, and yeah, no, those, and so I guess what people if people want to know the things that happen, the doors that open when you devote yourself to your craft, and I used to have this saying about people that didn't devote themselves and that they were, and I'd say this in public, yeah, that guy fundamentally ignorant about his own profession. If you're not doing that, then you don't understand the moral obligation you have, and you don't understand what special trust and confidence means, because special trust and confidence doesn't have anything to do with Congress. It has to do with your word to the American people that their sons and daughters aren't going to come home in an aluminum can for any other reason than simply the enemy had a vote that day and some bad shit happens, that you are going to do everything in your power to move heaven and earth to bring their kid back to them. And that should keep you up at night. That should keep you reading. That should keep you PTing. Because the most cruel burden in life for somebody who devotes their life to the military is to know, and nobody can lift this burden from you, that you fucked it up by your lack of discipline, by your laziness, or your ignorance, and you could have prevented it, and you didn't. And people died or had parts of their bodies blown away, and it was your fucking fault. And when you're a leader, to have to live with that for the rest of your life, that is a horrible, horrible burden. And so to me, when you see people that won't do these things, you look at them like, what are you fucking doing, man?
Yeah.
Do you not understand that there's families all over this country that depend on you and that your decisions may make the difference between more pictures of them, that kid going up on a mantle someplace in Des Moines, Iowa. Because there's a Little League picture, there's a high school football picture, there's a couple prom pictures. This is a picture of that kid in his dress blues in front of the American flag at recruit training. And whether there's any more, maybe a function of your ability to lead, and you better be up to that shit, because if you're not and you fuck it up, you know, it's on you, and nobody can lift that burden from you ever.
Right, that's true. And but I'll tell you this: there's a lot of guys who they just take what the Marine Corps gives them, and they take that and they apply their own native intelligence to the problem. And if they get in action, I mean, we're talking now like Ray Smith, we're talking like Audie Murphy. They don't know anything about the history of this or the history of that. I mean, it's better if they do, but they don't. They're just in a They're brave dudes who are tough and who are resourceful and smart, and they apply what they do know to the task at hand, and they get the job done. And a lot of times, these guys will get through that. I'm talking Ray Smith here. I'm talking probably Larry Livingston and maybe even James Livingston. They get through it and they're like, holy shit, I could have done, this stuff has happened to other people before,
right.
You know? And, but we've had guys who, I mean, you know, it's kind of like you talk about Lewis Puller, you know, the guy was a history fanatic from the time he was 16, 17 years old. And when you look at his combat performance, you don't see a lot of adroit tactical moves. But you do see a lot of leadership from the front, you know. And
you're being kind, right, Dan? By the way,
oh, again,
you were being kind when you said you don't see a lot of adroit moves there.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's not a lot of. I mean, you're on Guadalcanal. I mean, hey, you know, it's like
yeah, Peleliu was not his finest hour. But no, I hear what you're saying. But to me, it's. I mean, you have to be right. We know this. You have to be all in on this stuff, and yeah. And I think that's one of the things that. You know, guys like John Kelly and John Allen and Tom Sword, I mean, they opened up, and I got told, hey, you're not going to do well with John Allen. He is not your kind of guy, Mac. You're a ball buster, you know, and he's not that way. And John Allen opens doors for me and would shove me through him, go get him.
Yeah,
Everything I brought to him, he sat down with me. But let me tell you, you have to earn your way into that circle, right?
By
your devotion to your craft. And so to me, the message is be devoted to your craft. And reading's a huge part of it. But now, I mean, shit, you can do audiobooks when you're PTing. I mean, there's so many more ways that you can consume stuff. And I'll throw this out to people that are listening. I asked John Allen, he had all these books in his office, and I said, have you read every one of these? And he said, Matt?
Yeah.
The short answer is yes. And I said, well, what's the long answer? And he said, well, I do a thing called surveying books, and there's no reason to spend a lot of time on a book you don't care for, but it may be something that was recommended to you. If I find that I don't care for a book, I read the introduction, I read the first chapter, the second chapter, and I read the final chapter. And I call that surveying. I now have the gist of the book. If I need to go back based on something else that happens and I want more knowledge, you know, I'll go back. I may read the whole thing.
Right.
You know, but if I don't like a book, there's too many great things to read than to waste 6 weeks trying to get through a book that you don't like. So he said, so I don't do that. And I thought, and I was like, oh.
He would say that.
I do that.
He told me, Jeffrey, do you feel you have any weaknesses as an instructor? I go, yes, sir. I say fuck too much. He says, I myself have the same problem. I go, you? He says, yes. I'm thinking, I don't believe this guy. And he said, what I do is I employ what I call the triangle of death, where he takes his hands and he makes them, so it's like, it's more like a heart, you know, it's like an ace of spades pointed downwards.
Right.
Your thumbs are together and I have to tell you, I give all these, like, you know, Marine Corps ball speeches and shit. Whenever I do that, I never said fuck, ever. You know? And he said, you could even get so good, he told me, that you could, in your mind, have your hands like that and be, like, making gestures. And he's right. I mean, he's a fucking smart guy. Obviously, he found out about that somewhere. But something else he said, when he writes something, he said, when I have to write something, I sit down, and everything I think about what I'm going to write about, I just write it. Sometimes I even use punctuation. I write like 7, 8, 9, 12 pages, and then I look at it, and I start slashing it. You know, I just basically, it's our Ernest Hemingway technique until it gets down to like 5 paragraphs, you know? And but, yeah, General Allen was, you know, before he joined the Marine Corps, he was a nuke enlisted dude on a sub, right? He's a bona fide fucking smart guy. And I don't mean a smart guy like smart guy, like a lawyer smart guy. I mean a smart guy like numbers and fucking symbols and widgets that make fucking nuclear bombs work. He's that type of smart guy, you know?
No, he's a smart guy. But again, the point is that it was really, Chris Woodbridge was very excited because he thought that some of the vibrant, you know, discussions that we had about maneuver warfare were returning, you know, to the Marine Corps, and the thing that triggered it was this discussion about leadership. And that, you know, one of the things he and I were talking about the Gazette. One of the cool things about the Gazette is if you what is that? Is somebody snoring?
Yeah.
Is that your wife?
Yeah, she's all right though. She's good.
Is she's snoring? Is that her? I wondered. I thought it was you sleeping.
She's sleeping. She's all right now. She's not limited by our conversation.
That'll be the title of the segment.
Yeah, well, that was gonna be the morning.
Jeff Kenny's wife snores. Now I lost my train of thought. Oh no. I was talking about, you know, you read some of this stuff, and then if you'll go into the digital archives.
Yeah, I tell you, it wasn't Lori, it was my dog snoring. First she was snoring.
Don't blame it on the dog. I know this. I know the truth now. I know, and now you've thought, like, you've IP beat it. She's going to kill me if I let this stand and I don't follow my sword for my wife.
But where is that damn wife of mine? I haven't seen her all day.
But when you talk about these kind of issues, if you go look into the digital archives of the Gazette, there is the most incredible stuff.
Yeah.
For instance, put discipline in there, right? And watch all the stuff that comes up and the years that it comes back from. It's awesome. You get articles from the 40s. From the 50s and talking about bitching about discipline in the Marine Corps. It's incredible. And so it's this great asset and it helps round out the discussion with some historical perspective that like the General Van Riper gave in when he did his episode of On Discipline. If you ever listen to it, because he says, look, anybody who wants to tell me about the old Corps, you better be older than, what, he'd say, 85 or something like that? You better be older than 85. Other than that, I don't want to hear it.
Right.
Because that's the core that I lived in.
Yeah.
And then Woody said, I used it as a headline. Hold on.
You know, Woody was in General Mass Battalion during Desert Storm. You know that, right?
I do. He said, there's a flipping equal sign between discipline in garrison and discipline on the battlefield.
Right.
I said, did you just say flipping live on the radio? He said, yeah, Mac. So anyway, it's been interesting. No, I just
when we were at IOC and at TBS, Woody was over at OCS because he came over to Harry Lee Hall all the time. He worked for like General Colonel Fox. When we were at, remember Colonel Fox had IOC when we were at TBS, when we were instructors at IOC.
No, he had OCS.
Yeah.
When you
that was OCS. That's
right. You know, I didn't meet Woody until I started doing this, and then I never actually met Colonel Fox. I mean, I saw him from afar at different things, but I never actually met.
Still kicking, man.
What?
I think he's still alive.
No, he passed away.
When?
He passed away last winter. They buried him like 2 months ago.
Oh my bus! Because I just read an interview with him. Must have been an old one.
Yeah. No, I had Barney Barnum on talking after he passed away. Barney Barnum fired for him the night of his actions that leads to his Medal of Honor. And Barnum tells the funniest story.
About the fishing, yeah.
About the fishing thing, and it's absolutely hilarious. So anyway, all right. Any final thoughts, Jeff? Final thoughts on either Iran or the gift of reading as a professional? Any final thoughts?
No, just I think that if you ever run into a young Marine and you talk to him for more than 2 or 3 minutes, you should recommend a book to him. You know, and we have enough books that we've read in our repertoire of books that, you know, fit it to the guy if you can, but if you can't, you know, just whether you're talking Fields of Fire, whether you're talking, books from different conflicts and stuff, always recommend a book to a guy that's going to, you know, expand his expertise because you never know. You just never know, you know, the fire that could catch in that guy.
Right. Timmy, final thoughts?
Yeah, and we've all seen good commanders, we've all seen bad commanders, and we've seen some commanders who make it look like an art, because it is an art, and that's why you read and get a wide basis of knowledge with which to prosecute your art, because when you're good at this shit, you are an artist on many different levels. I've never seen a guy who was good at this and was an artist who did not read impulsively.
Right.
Never. Not yeah.
I remember Major General Caulfield. He's a two-star when we were at the basic school in ILC. And I remember being at a PME with him, and he was a caisson. I can't remember what he did there. But he said he got off the 46, and he said, everything I saw made sense to me because of the reading I'd done. I had been a voracious reader my whole life, and the things I saw made sense to me. And the only reason that they made sense to me was because of all the battlefields I had been on in the books that I had read and what they had contributed to my knowledge. And he said, and I was effective from day one as a leader there. And I want to say he might have been an opso or something, but he said, I was effective there as a leader because of, you know, all the fights I had been in my life as I read different books. Every one of those things contributed to my effectiveness in Vietnam. And I'll never forget that. And I'm like, holy shit. And then he went on to say, look, every sand table, every map exercise, every one of those is a repetition in the gymnasium of combat. He said, so get to the gym, right, get strong, and get ready, because at some point it'll darken your doorstep if you stay in this thing. So, anyway. All right, boys, have a good week. We'll talk to you next week, and thanks for the visit.
You're right.
Yeah, Mac, I'll talk to you soon, man.
There you have it. There you have it. Messieurs Kenny and Lynch here on Thursday. Don't go away. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. You know, how entertaining is that? The amazing thing is it goes from relatively deep, insightful to relatively stupid really fast. Which is what I've always loved about it, right? Honestly. It's what I love about those guys and those discussions. Because it can go from smart to stupid very quickly. So, I will tell you this, in summing that hour, our sanctions, right, our economic sanctions are pointed at the center of gravity of the Iranian regime, okay? And we need not be deterred by any other thing Iran would try to do, because that is what's moving the pile. The existence of their regime, right, is in jeopardy because of those sanctions. So, right, in the Marine Corps, we talk about, you know, finding a vulnerability to put pressure on that leads to your adversary's center of gravity. Well, you know, their center of gravity is their, well, their economy is a critical vulnerability, probably. The center of gravity is their former government, right? And that former government is at risk when you put pressure on their economy. So, hopefully the nation will not be deterred, right? That some smart people understand that we can take, first of all, Iran does not want to get into a conventional shooting war with us because, for the same reason nobody else wants to, right? You do us such a favor when you do that, it's ridiculous. So if you're going to mess with the United States, you have to mess with them asymmetrically. So, and we have to be just as disciplined, resisting other temptations that would galvanize world opinion, public opinion against the United States. stay the course, bring them to their knees economically. So, and no, Chris Woodbridge was on yesterday, and that was the basis for my question to those guys. And that is this whole discussion about discipline has created this pretty interesting discussion, learning opportunity in the Marine Corps that my own opinion is that, you know, people ought to double down on and push hard. So, interesting stuff. The chef joins me tomorrow. I'm headed to Lake Tahoe tomorrow at some point. My godson, Michael McGarry, is going to get married. So congratulations to he and his fiance that will soon be husband and wife here pretty soon. So fired up about that. Have a great day. On a Thursday, All Marine Radio, over and out. My taker.